You ready? Okay, we're gonna start with proposed final legal budget for fiscal year 2014. So we need to adjourn to a public hearing, so we need a motion to adjourn the regular meeting to public hearing for the purpose of receiving public comment on adoption of the final legal budget for fiscal year 2014 and the tentative budget for fiscal year 2015.
So moved.
Second.
Okay.
All in favor.
Oh, all in favor, sorry.
Aye.
You opposed.
They're all waiting.
They're all waiting. Well, I'm, the practice Roy took over last time.
Well, I have a presentation.
Good.
Drum roll.
It's just not on the TV.
Oh, okay, that's fine.
So, I did give each of the board members a revised copy of the budget and what was in your packet. It's minimal as far as the revisions, I don't think there's anything significant. Also, for any of you, there are copies of the proposed budget on that table back there. If you like numbers, there are lots of numbers on it, so.
Do I have a choice?
It'll all seem clear in a minute.
Well, if that doesn't work, I'll just kind of.
That's fine.
Give an overview of the significant points with our budget. So, just a couple of things for the fiscal year 2015, so for the upcoming year. We are making one rather large accounting change, which is that we're moving about $500,000 of our expenditures from the capital fund into the maintenance and operation fund. And we accomplish that by just doing a tax shift from capital levy into the local levy. So as far as the amount of money we're spending, it's the same. It's just that more money will show up as being spent in Fund 10 and less in Fund 32 because of that. The purpose for that is we've had some maintenance, salary expenditures, and some other expenditures that used to qualify as capital outlay, for example, like purchasing a copy machine. But really, by today's accounting practices, they want all of those in Fund 10. And the only thing that should be in Fund 32 is really large maintenance projects that are related to buildings themselves. And so Fund 32 has actually shrunk quite a bit over the years, and we're down to under $1 million in projected expenses for next fiscal year. So that's one of the significant things. As far as funding, we received a WPU increase from the state. Most of that goes into mandatory expenses for the school district. So one of those would be the retirement rate increase. So for each employee who qualifies for retirement, we put 20.46% of their salary into the retirement system. And that goes up to 22.19 this next year, so about a 1.7% increase. And that's just under $200,000 as far as the financial impact. Just from our basic funding, that's not including employees who are funded by a specific program. Health insurance is expected to increase about $75,000. That's minor compared to what we've had in the past. And what we're planning on doing this upcoming year is moving, so starting September 1st, from a traditional health insurance plan to a high deductible health insurance plan. I think most of you have been in on some of those conversations, but anyway, so the budget impact as far as medical insurance for the upcoming year is not as much as it has been previously. We did get about $100,000 in tax growth, property tax growth. The last 3 years we've averaged about $200,000, so it's a little bit less than the last 3 years, but nevertheless some growth, and that's always helpful for us.
She's got that there.
Okay.
Huntington Lake right there?
Yeah, I bet.
I'm sure it is.
A really, really good day with geese in the front.
They have crawdads in the front.
That's right.
Crawdads.
They're hopping.
You turn those chairs, turn around.
Those crawdads have made it all the way down to our place.
So now I'll talk about here.
Zillions of, there was never crawdads in that river when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah. Scare me to catch them, little buggers.
Yeah, they scream a lot, don't they?
Okay, so as we go through and develop our budget, these are just some of the basic data points, I guess, that we have. Assessed valuation, this might be interesting for everybody who lives here in the county.
Really?
That is interesting.
It's approaching 2 billion. And the growth in that was about 31 million. And what I was just saying before was that growth projects to 100,000 in extra revenue for the school district for next year.
That's amazing.
In the proposed budget, we have our legislative estimates as of today. And estimated fall enrollment, full-time equivalent employees, number of employees, number of funds and programs, you can see there. Okay, budgeted revenues. So in most of the rest of this presentation, we'll show fiscal year 15, which is our tentative budget that we're looking at today, and also our final fiscal year 14 budget, which ends on June 30th. So for our fiscal year 2015 tentative, you can see the budget amount there. Most of that is managed at the district level, but we do have a student activity fund, which is money that schools manage, but we pull in those totals at the end of each year and report those on our financial statements, so they are part of our budget. For the fiscal year 2014, you see the budgeted revenue is actually higher, and there are some reasons for that. We have a lot of budget lines that come in after the beginning of the year, and so by the time we have a final budget, it's always higher than what the original budget is, and that's why you see some of that difference there. You also see there I put there is some deferred revenue and also fund balance included in that final budget, and so that's part of the difference that you'd see as well. Okay, so this is just a comparison of revenue sources. We have local, state, and federal, and that's just a quick overview of how much comes from each source in those proposed budgets. Let me talk for just a minute about certified tax rates. So each year, the school district sets a certified tax rate. It's actually a rate that comes from the state tax commission, and then we either approve rates that are within the certified tax rate, or if we're going to exceed the certified tax rate, then we have an additional hearing in August to have a truth in taxation hearing. So for fiscal year 15, that state basic levy amount is actually set by the state. The school district does not control that, but it's an equivalent rate for each school district in the state. And the projected total is that 1477. But that will change when it's set. It's usually 2 or 3 days after this hearing each year, so we'll find out soon. And then I put underneath that what I call locally controlled property tax rate, because that's what we actually will control or set as a school district. And so you can see those rates there. I'll show you on the next slide that we do have a proposed judgment levy, and because of that, we'll exceed the certified tax rate in this proposal, but other than that judgment levy, all of our levies are within the certified tax rate. And would also note that our tax rate is the fifth lowest out of 41 school districts in the state, and so that's a good thing for our citizens here in the county. Okay, so this is just a little bit more information on the locally controlled tax rates. We have a voted local levy, capital local levy, and if you look at that capital local, see how it goes from 699 to 450. That's that change I was talking about where we're shifting funds from capital into maintenance and operations, and then under the board local levy, you would see an opposite where it's gone up, and that's just that compensating tax shift. And then the judgment levy is to pay judgments that have been issued or approved over the last year. We've actually had two. What that is where a company has their tax rate reevaluated, and so they're able to get a refund because they actually qualified for a lower tax payment, I guess. And so as a school district, by law, we are allowed to issue a judgment levy to recover what we pay back to those companies in property taxes. Any questions to this point? This is just a quick summary of major state revenue sources, just to give you an idea of how things flow from year to year. You'll see that back in fiscal year 8, it's kind of interesting sometimes to compare where things were a few years ago. The one that we always talk about is the flexible allocation that used to be almost 1.8 million, and now we get 100,000 out of it. So, but some of the other revenue sources have gone up over time as well. Necessarily existing small schools is an example of that. And that funding has been really critical for our school district because we have several schools that do qualify as necessarily existing small schools. And it allows the district to maintain the programs at the schools and the staff. Okay, these are federal revenues. Again, just for your information, probably one important one to note there would be IDEA, which is special ed funding. You see from 7 years ago, it's actually gone down. Mm-hmm. You consider all of the increases from benefits and things like that, it makes it harder and harder each year to maintain some of those programs at the levels that they are used to being at. Okay, these are budgeted expenditures by category, 2014 and 15. Always salaries and benefits are our highest categories as far as expenditures, followed by supplies and then property. This is 2015. And just gives you an idea of how much we budget in each of those categories. This is a real broad overview of how things are. I mean, just within the supply category, you have all sorts of different budget lines and budget items, but this gives a broad overview. Okay, this just shows the budgeted expenditures by fund, and general fund, student activities is the fund where schools are managing those budgets, but we pull them onto our accounting books at the end of the year. Non-K through 12 includes preschool, driver's education. Is there anything else? There's just a couple of programs that we run that aren't directly related to K through 12 education. Capital outlay again shows that shift that I had talked about. And so we're actually under $1 million in projected expenditure revenue and capital outlay now. And then food service or child nutrition. Okay, significant changes for the fiscal year 15 budget. I've already talked about that retirement rate increase. The proposed budget does include steps and lanes for employees and a 1% cost of living adjustment. The judgment levy, you saw on the tax rates, the revenues that we would generate for that are about $180,000, and that's to pay back those two judgments that I talked about. And then again, some of the maintenance expenses will move from Fund 32 to Fund 10. Fun stuff, I know.
Kind of
any
stuff
questions?
We dream of.
I think one of the interesting things is that most people don't realize, especially our employees, is how much beyond the regular salary is has to be covered besides the salary and benefits themselves. It's retirement, social security, and it's a huge, huge percentage that has to be paid on top of the salary and other benefits. That used to be, for the most part, a line item in the state budget that Jared referred to. Now it's called a flexible allocation, was social security and retirement. And one year, in order to balance the WPU at the same level, they took that money out of there, put it in the WPU. You still have to pay for retirement, but it showed the WPU increasing, or at least staying the same, but that money disappeared out of that social security retirement fund and was renamed flexible allocation to give it so that you could use it however you wanted, even though you didn't have that choice.
Okay, are there any comments or questions for this public hearing? It really does help to break it down. You do see that.
It does, and you simplify it for me.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's just with salary and benefits alone, it's about 75% of the budget goes to that. So that's a big chunk. So if there's no comments, we will close the hearing and reconvene the general session. So we need a motion to declare the public hearing closed and the general session reconvened.
I'll make a motion that we do that.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, then we need to adopt the final legal budget for fiscal year 2014. So we need a motion for that final legal budget for that for year 2014 as it's been presented by Jared.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, and then we need the proposed adoption of the tentative budget for fiscal year 2015 as presented. The tax rate for the state basic levy, which is set by the Utah State Office of Education and the Tax Commission, and may change when finalized. The proposed tax rate includes a judgment levy, generating additional revenue of $179,407. Because of the judgment levy, the total proposed tax rate exceeds the certified tax rate, so the final tax rate hearing will be held in the August board meeting. So we need a proposed adoption of the tentative budget.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you for that, Jared, and all of you. Appreciate that. So let's go to the consent items, the warrants and the minutes for May 2014 and the financial reports for May 2014. Are there any questions on that? Any discussion?
No, I move that we approve them.
I'll second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, personnel actions, names for approval.
Okay, we do have some names to approve. Usually in about March, April, May, June, and July, we're always looking for. We've had quite a few retirements this year, and we've had some people quit, and others leave for other various reasons. I'd like to present to the board names Heather Atwood as a teacher at Cottonwood Elementary School. Heather's been working, I think, in preschool, but is certified, and she will be teaching the second grade at Cottonwood. Christy Sen, S-E-N-N, teacher at Bookcliff Elementary, fourth grade. Christy has done some internship student teaching this past year up in Provo area, and last I heard, she was engaged, and her fiance was following her down to Green River. But she will be teaching at Bookcliff Elementary. Nathan O'Brien, teach fine arts at Green River High. Nathan is from Payson, and he is in Florida right now finishing a program back there. He has a master's degree in music.
Oh my.
And he has his mother mother owns a home in Green River, although she's not there. He's been down there several times and run the rivers and, but he will be, his specialty is instrumental music. He does have some experience in other areas, special interest in stringed music, so we're hopeful to look at a stringed instrument program at Book Cliff.
Who's his mother?
I don't know. I honestly can't say. It's either his mother or grandmother that has a home down there. She doesn't live there.
Huh.
But has a home somewhere east of the grocery store there.
Oh, really?
A lot of homes in there, but.
Okay.
This, we just hired him, finalized it yesterday, but.
Awesome.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Wow.
He'll be doing some small group instrumentals, probably a theater.
Supposed to sign there too.
And, stringed instrument, general music, so it'll be a music focus. Present Stuart Morris as a CTE teacher at Green River High. Stuart has an MBA. He has a little bit of experience, I believe he will be on an ARL. He does not have a teaching license, but he does have a master's degree and has been approved by the state for an alternative route to licensure. And he will be doing some business classes, but also is working on endorsements so we can get our shop open down there. And probably some CAD, we hope. Josie Mitchison, 2-hour child nutrition at Huntington. Shelley Fillmore, 2-hour child nutrition at Huntington. Joy Lynn Bloomer, child nutrition at Santa Fe, 2 hours. Holly Smith, child nutrition at Farron Elementary, 2 hours. Christy Guyman, child nutrition at Canyon View, 2 hours. And also Amanda Lake as an educational assistant at Cottonwood Elementary. I believe that's preschool. Is that right, Jackie? That's what I recall, 3 hours. So there's quite a list of names there, but I would recommend the board approve those new hires for next school year. Oh, excuse me. We approved Carl Jensen before, didn't we? Another meeting, okay.
Mm-hmm. Is that Christy Guyman, my Christy Guyman?
No. It's a different one. Okay. Yeah, she's going to moonlight at the child at school lunch and at Canyon View.
Who's Heather
Atwood? I knew that would probably come up.
Murray?
No, it's
Do you know Heather Atwood?
Different one.
I don't.
Who is Heather Atwood? Can I just ask that? Is she from a local Heather Atwood?
She's married to Jake, isn't she?
Yeah, the one that does the rec center now, Rick Atwood.
Oh, that's
there
right.
You go.
That's
I,
right.
I was trying to rack my brain for
it. Courtney's daughter-in-law.
Oh.
I didn't mean to give you a heart attack, Larry.
Well, I'll make a motion that we approve those new hires.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, Henry High School, Larry Davis. Principal Davis, we're happy to hear from you.
Well, I have a lot for you. Last winter, the board gave Emory High School permission to conduct a pilot drug testing program. And we did that all through fourth term with great success. I wanted to give the board a report on that, first of all. Dixie is here with me. She's part of our administrative team and was actively involved in this from the beginning, which was really about 3 years ago that we started this. The spreadsheet that I just handed you is information from that pilot testing program. It breaks down by week the number of tests that we conducted, the outcome of those tests, and the student involvement as far as activity is concerned for each of those. We work with the Emory County Medical Center on this. Very good to work with. They actually drew the numbers. We provided the SIS numbers without names. They had a method of drawing the numbers. They were very flexible as to when they could come or would come at our request, time of day, day of week, so that it was not the same over and over again. And the cost was quite reasonable, I think, at $15 per test. And they showed a lot of discretion and privacy, and I think worked with our students with some fidelity. I didn't have any complaints about any of the testing from students or from parents over that whole term of testing. On the last page, you can see the totals. We tested 49 students. That included 6 freshmen. That was a different dynamic because we had to go to the junior highs to do that. And what we had done was to collect junior high draws over time until we had 5 or 6 so that we could go over on a given day, a designated day, and just do the junior high. Those 6 reported here were all from San Rafael. The most that we had drawn from Canyon View was 2. So we never got to Canyon View. We were hoping that the draws would provide us with more students at Canyon View, but with only 2, then we felt like by the end of the school year that it wouldn't be necessary to go over to Canyon View to test. So we had 6 freshmen, 13 sophomores, 21 juniors, and 9 seniors were tested over this period of time. I didn't give you one of these, did I? Sorry. For a total of 49, it included 27 female, 22 males that were tested. It included 8 from the baseball team, 5 from boys soccer, 5 from cheer, 5 from drill, 5 from girls golf, 6 from softball, 9 from student council, and 9 from track. Now that doesn't add up to 49 because some of those students were involved in more than one activity. There were 2 reasonable suspicion tests, which is part of the policy. If we had reason to believe that a student involved in these activities had been engaged in illegal activity, then we had them tested based on reasonable cause. We had 2 of those that were both negative. One of those was sent to a lab for additional testing and it came back negative. So out of the 49, we had 49 negative results. And I think that the impetus behind this primarily was as a deterrent for our student athletes and others involved in activities. And based on this data, I think that that has certainly been effective as a deterrent. Any questions about the spreadsheet?
So you feel like that there may have been some that would be involved in drugs that were deterred by this, or?
Yes, I do.
You see it in your school that there's a different
feeling?
I see
it in the school. A year ago, when we were really investing our time in developing this, we were hearing all kinds of things about students involved in different things, and it was coming from students, it was coming from parents, it was coming from the sheriff's department, and it was fairly common from year to year like that, leading up to this year. But for us to have 2 reasonable suspicions at that time of the school year, I was just absolutely thrilled. I think it is making a difference.
The other question I had is that when it's, is there, do you think there's any possibility that they're bringing urine in outside?
No, I don't.
You
think
don't?
So.
Okay. That was
I
always
don't
my
think
concern, because
so
that
all.
That is a tendency that people know ahead. Or they have it there and there.
The procedure almost makes it impossible because they take temperature of the sample. which should be at or near body temperature. And they also color the water so that they're not diluting the sample with water. They all use the same stall. We do it one at a time. We don't bring all the students up there at one time. And as per policy, we do not have an adult in the stall, but just outside the restroom. And so I felt like the precautions that the professionals from the clinic took were almost making it impossible for any violation. So we felt really good about that. The two tested students that had question marks by them, one on April 3rd and one on April 7th.
The same person.
That was a faint line. Sometimes the lines aren't clearly defined and raise some doubt as to whether it's positive or negative. So we had one retested and we had one sent to the lab that I mentioned earlier. And the lab was definitive. That result came back negative. So it worked out well. We were almost hoping for a positive so that we'd be able to activate the procedure on that, but we're glad we didn't. Now, regarding the policy, after going through this and exercising the terms of the policy, working with parents and students and the procedures, the only thing that we had a problem with came about at the end of the school year when we had drill team tryouts. Anybody know why that would be a problem? Other than it's drill team. Drill team is the only one that would have eighth graders involved. Because there's that 6 week period of time when they're on the drill team, they've gone through tryouts as eighth graders made the squad, and they're on our drill team, but our policy set testing 9 through 12. So our recommendation is shown in red on the policy, the very last page of the policy, which is the consent form, second paragraph. Board of Education has implemented this random drug testing program for students in grades 9 through 12, and then in parentheses 8 through 12 for drill team, who voluntarily participate in extracurricular activities at Emory High School as one way to prevent, deter, and detect drug use among students. Now, I believe that we had, during that 6 week period, 3, maybe 4 eighth graders. Technically, they're still eighth graders until we do the promotion on SIS, which will take place within the next few weeks. But they all got the consent form. It was signed. It was turned in to me by the advisor. But because we didn't have it stated as such in the policy, then we did not include them in the pool. So that's the only change that I am recommending that the board approve. Otherwise, I'd like to leave the policy as it is. Dixie, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Well, was you also going to increase the amount the students are going to pay?
I'm going to do that when we get
that's
to
separate
the fees.
Deal, right?
Okay.
Yes. I will talk about that.
I had a question. I saw a news thing about in Wasatch School District, mm-hmm. and a girl was testing positive because she was on prescription meds. Is there a clause for that or something?
Yes, there is. It's outlined in this very policy.
Okay.
And the person from the clinic who is collecting the samples asked that question.
Okay.
Are you taking any prescription medication? And when the student athlete says that they are, then the adult calls the parent to verify that. And if they can't reach the parent, then they will call the doctor to get verification.
Okay.
So do they still run the test?
Yes.
They do.
We run the test. And we didn't have a lot of kids on prescribed medication. There for some cold medication, things like that, but not a lot of kids from this 49 were on that kind of medication. It takes about an hour to do 5 to 6 tests. You know, sometimes these kids need longer than others to produce a sample, and we don't want them to feel pressure. And we have one student waiting up at the office while the testing is going on elsewhere in the building. They're called out of class depending on what time process is going on, and we varied at different times during the day and also during the week. Sometimes we would do it late in the week and then early the next week, just to kind of keep kids off balance a little bit and not think that they can figure out when testing is going to take place.
So it is collected at the school?
Yes.
Oh, that's
they come
good.
Right to the school.
That's great.
We do have a few things to work out with junior high. The logistics are a little bit different there. And we ran into a few problems at Santa Fe that Mr. Meekum and I are working on. And what we figure out there, we assume will work well at Canyon View when we need to test there.
Great.
So I'm asking for approval of the edited version of this drug testing policy. I will send a copy of this to Mr. Johnson at Green River. I know he's interested in taking a look at it, looking at the data.
I move that we approve the
Is it
changes.
On the agenda?
Yeah.
Yes,
it
is.
I don't have my.
I'll second it.
Yes.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Great.
Thank you for that.
Yes.
Thank
great.
You.
Great.
I think it's a positive.
I do too.
I hate to see that we need it. I never heard a word of anybody being tested, and I never heard of a party going on that there was alcohol or anything. I mean, I was like, whatever's happening here.
So you
yeah.
saw a change, huh?
Oh, I didn't hear any negative about, I mean, I never heard anybody going
to
throw a party. Yeah.
That's good
I mean,
to hear.
I didn't know they were testing. Never heard that word that direction
yeah.
either. So
I was involved with group of kids from Carbon and Emory High Schools, and it was a very interesting discussion, and I think what we're doing is working.
Good.
Wow.
We think so, too.
I do.
Yes.
Great.
What's that?
Spring.
Yeah. Stuff going on. Sure. Yeah. Wow.
As I mentioned, the cost for doing the test is $15. When I originally pitched the program to the board, I mentioned that we would be assessing a $10 fee. But in order to meet the cost of conducting those tests, I need to request a $15 drug testing fee. This would be an annual fee. One-time fee each year. It's not $15 per sport
Good.
Or per activity.
Okay.
It's just $15. This would also give us enough into a drug testing account that we could cover any additional lab costs and also would cover fee waivers. So I'm requesting that the board approve a $15 fee for drug testing. And do you want me to go through
yeah.
all of these
yeah.
before you
let's
do them all.
Can't we?
Yeah.
Regarding forensics, we have not charged an activity fee for forensics. The regular activity fee is $25 with a cap of $50. Forensics is a Utah High School Activity Association sanctioned program, but we have not been charging those students. Ironically, it's one of the most traveled groups
mm-hmm.
that we have.
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever had any
yep.
kids in speech and debate, you know that they're gone just about every weekend from January through, or from the first of the year through March, and it's pretty expensive, motels, meals, things
mm-hmm.
like that. So Tom Hansen, the advisor, has requested approval to include forensics in that activity fee. Football, Coach Jones has talked to me extensively about increasing the participation fee for football. This is based on the cost of equipment and uniforms, which has a much shorter life than equipment and uniforms in all the other sports. It's very expensive to operate.
No, if you'd get them to quit tackling each other.
We go to a flag thing.
Wear and tear.
So what we're requesting is that the activity fee for football be doubled from $25 per participant to $50 per participant. That would generate quite a bit of money. He said he's anticipating 70 kids out for football this year.
Wow.
Which includes the ninth graders, and we did get some capital outlay money to help get the equipment to start that up. But in order to sustain that, I think that this participation fee is necessary. So,
any idea what percentage of those 70 kids would be like on fee waiver?
Well, at the school, it's about 38%, I think, fee waiver, so it would probably be about the same for football.
My only concern about this is my understanding is that the football participants are required to buy a Spartan package that costs around...
Yeah, they call it a spirit pack, I think.
That costs around $200.
If it's required and it's stuff that they keep, then they would have to have that, but it's like maybe practice shirt and shorts and football shoes, things like that. If they can get that equipment somewhere else, then they don't necessarily need to have it.
Okay.
But all those things that they keep would not be fee waivable. But the coaches are aware of that. And I know especially Coach Jones tries to really keep those expenses down.
Okay.
Some of the programs have like hoodies and day wear.
As long as he's aware of it, you just would hate to have
the
participation limited because of finances.
Right.
Okay.
And then regarding all activity fees, I would request that the board seriously consider lifting the $50 cap and allowing us to charge those activity fees per sport. With no limit to it. Now, realistically, kids are going to be involved in two or three sports, one, two, or three. On occasion, you may have four. This year, for example, our boys' soccer team did not qualify for any of the state playoffs, so they were done fairly early. A lot of those kids went into track. So that would be an additional one. The most, I think, that they would pay, and this would include being on the football team with $50 fee as opposed to $25, and it would also include the $15 drug testing fee would be $140. And in a lot of schools, even schools our size, I can't give you a list of the data or the schools, but that's what student athletes pay per sport.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure, that's true.
You know, sometimes sometimes $300 just to participate in the sport. One of the problems when we have the cap, as the money comes in the fall and in the winter, it goes directly to the sports those kids are participating in. It goes right into their budget. By the time you get to spring sports and they're capped out, those sports aren't getting any money at all. And these are sports that don't get any gate receipts. These are sports, especially softball and baseball, that have umpire expenses that are incredible. Those rates go up, and we typically have a hard time finding local officials, so we're paying mileage. We've had people coming from Payson and Delta and all over, and the mileage you have to pay to get them here is more than the money they receive for officiating. So it's really killing those programs, and they spend a lot of time fundraising and doing everything they can to keep the program afloat. But I think having that participation fee go right into their program would be very helpful to them financially. Any questions that you might have about these requests?
So a boy who plays football, he would have his $50 there, but then if he played basketball, he'd have 25, and if he did track, he'd have another 25.
Right.
Okay.
Plus $15 for a
blood test. Mm-hmm. Okay.
One time, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a question about that. Is this forensics? Is that drama? Is that included? Are
drama
those,
is
that a different?
No, it's different.
It's a different. It is sanctioned by the Activity Association. They don't have meets other than region drama meet and a state drama meet.
So they don't have fees?
They don't collect fees? No.
Okay, that was my question.
We don't assess fees for drama. They don't have the kind of expenses that these other.
Okay. Any discussion? Any concerns or? It seems to make sense to me. If you participate in the sport, you pay the fee. I agree.
It's not something that's required to do, so.
Right, if they.
And actually, these fees are cheap compared to some other schools. I have a friend whose son plays football, and it's over $500 annually for him to play.
Wow.
Try having three cheerleaders.
Oh, yeah, that's even worse. Yeah, cheerleading and drill team cost way more than
that's
football.
That's true.
I think I ought to get a break instead of $3,000 on it.
Mm-hmm. What about prom? Is there a prom fee? Dress is outrageous.
Prom is like a wedding. You buy a dress for one dance.
Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
And then you can't sell it. Yeah. It's been used.
I have a couple of concerns, but I think we should go ahead and pass it and see whether there are negative repercussions.
Okay.
I have
we could feel where it's at.
We will do.
If you do this at one school, you're probably going to have to do a district wide on your fee schedule for your high schools.
Yeah.
I don't know about junior highs.
Yeah,
it's
not going to be a.
But
yeah, junior highs will be different, but I think high schools probably, yes. Yeah.
I think it'd be good. We don't have football, so it'd just be.
Right, that's true, too. All right, then, is the motion's in order to pass the request for change in fee schedule?
Well, I'll make the motion that we do so.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay.
Right.
Let you do the accreditation review.
We'll add those in, but the entire fee schedule we will bring next month for approval.
Okay.
Then we'll just include these in there.
Thank you.
Emory High School went through the advanced ed accreditation process during the last school year. I think we were the only school in the district to do that. Is that right, Kirk?
I think so.
Any of you,
I was
going to
say,
is
up next year.
And this is a new process, and we've got the results back that I wanted to share with you. The two handouts that I have given you, the first one is the administrative summary on the recommendations. I'll go through that a little bit more thoroughly. The second one, this one is the report that we received from Advance Ed. So, and I encourage you to read it. This is the visiting team's report and their recommendation. It goes to the Advance Ed people, both on the national and the state level. They are the ones who give the final accreditation. Which I've not received yet, but I'm very confident that we will be fully accredited as recommended by the visiting team for 5 years. In the report, there are recommendations. They go through and evaluate multiple standards, 10 standards, and they rate these on a 1-4 scale. It involved 2 days of evaluation, on-site evaluation, visiting team with 3 members from within the state of Utah. 2 were from St. George, 1 Bruce Bean from Price, he's the principal at Carbon High School, was part of that team. And they interviewed groups of people, groups of parents, groups of students, groups of teachers, the accreditation team, which was me and Dixie and Dana and Steven, and they observed teaching. It was fairly thorough. I wouldn't say it was not without its flaws, as we kind of evaluated the evaluators. But we did get a lot of good information from this and things that we can use to make our school better. There were two areas rated as one that we have already begun to address. We did this in our school improvement meeting. They're listed on the summary notes and worksheet. First one, the school engages in a systematic, inclusive, and comprehensive process to review, revise, and communicate a school purpose for student success. We've discussed ways that we can establish the purpose, establish that in an understandable and meaningful way, and then communicate that to our stakeholders. And I will personally be working on this summer, which will be presented in the opening faculty meeting, also in our first community council meeting. Then we'll begin to shop that to our parents and students. And by the end of next school year, we will have that fully established. The second indicator that was rated a one, all staff members participate in a continuous program of professional learning. This one was especially emotional for me because I have spent a lot of time in professional development at our school.
Yeah.
And for the evaluators to rate this as a one, I took personally, didn't I?
It was rough.
It was a good one.
Even explaining to them that we hold PD 360 every Monday for our teachers, I personally conduct that training. That we, as far as our funding will go, will help teachers attend off-campus professional development training. We've done a lot of professional development training for all of our faculty related to the new evaluation instrument, transitioning to the Common Core. And we've done all this without any state-level professional development money. Which disappeared going on 3 years now. And it's been very hard, but we're willing to be as creative as we can be to enhance this. One of the things that our faculty really needs to be aware of is that as we go into the new evaluation instrument, any weaknesses in their practice needs to be addressed through professional development. And we've got to find ways to provide that. It's our responsibilities. We don't just tell them, you know, you're not doing well in this area, fix it. If you're not doing well in this area, here's what we can do to help you get better. And we've got to be creative and come up with ways to do that. And one thing the board can help us with is that we do have now through legislative action, the opportunity of having professional development days at no cost to the number of required days of attendance for students. And I would really like you to consider allowing us, as part of the district calendar, to have those professional development days. One day that would be perfect is the last day of school. We had 20 students on the last day of school. Mm-hmm. And it was just half day, minimum day for students. But we could have done a full day of professional development. It's a contract day for teachers. But it could have really gone a long way towards addressing some of the needs, especially when they're fresh in the minds of the teachers. You're just finishing the school year. You know, what worked, what didn't work, and what can we do to make our school better? I think we could get a lot of good mileage out of that. And there may be some other days during the calendar year that would be effective along those lines as well.
Well, what it allows you to do is take your 180 days, reduce them by up to so many days, and use those for professional development. The problem for next year is that you have to have that on your published calendar and approved by the board 90 days before the new school calendar starts. And then there's also another 60-day approval or something before a certain date with the State Board of Education. It doesn't mean that the board couldn't designate some minimum days for that or even next year, but to have that as under that law, you have to have it on your approved calendar 90 days before school starts, and we're beyond that for next year. But
mm-hmm.
I'm sure we can do what we need to do and say I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. And then do it for the next year.
Don't put that in the newspaper, please.
No, I think you meant do it this year and say I'm sorry for the legislature.
Yeah.
Right.
But as you consider future calendars, it's certainly,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I have to be honest with you, the biggest challenge, or one of the biggest challenges that we have in our school district is the lack of resources to do professional development.
Yeah, I'm sure. Mm-hmm.
We just don't have it. We don't have any funding.
Nope.
And teachers need to be compensated for those things, and we don't have the funding to do it. For a while there, we had all those extended days, and we had funds that we could pay stipends, and we were giving the schools professional development funding, and that went away. And we've been operating a lot of our professional development on fund balances that we've had,
mm-hmm.
but the quality teaching block grant went away, and it was a lot of money. So I agree. I agree fully with Larry on this, and Larry. Probably Mr. Davis, I should say, in board meeting, probably is one of the best we have at providing
mm-hmm.
professional
yes.
development.
Yeah, that's why I'm surprised
mm-hmm.
it's in here.
The teacher,
yeah.
so.
Really surprised. So, could you look at the calendar, though, kind of with that in mind, and see if there are a couple of days that we could come up with that would work, and then we can ask forgiveness of the legislature?
Yeah.
We can have that discussion with our principals and.
Okay.
We might have to do minimum days rather than
yes.
just full days off.
Yes.
Even that would be helpful.
Okay.
You know, and you can utilize your mentor teachers, your eye teachers, in addition to district office staff
mm-hmm.
in these trainings,
mm-hmm.
and really make it meaningful to our teachers.
Yep.
One thing that the visiting team talked about was doing professional development in faculty meetings. Well, we have regular faculty meetings every other Tuesday and an off-faculty meeting when we don't have general faculty meeting. And we don't have the time in those meetings to do anything other than school business.
Scheduling. Yeah.
And there is no time for professional development, at least meaningful professional development.
Right.
Very difficult.
You can put
mm-hmm.
an inspirational thought
mm-hmm.
on the board or something, you know,
mm-hmm.
and maybe get people thinking, but to really delve into some of the issues that we're confronting
yeah.
now in education and train teachers and get it down to where it's helping kids.
Skills.
You need some meaningful time.
Yeah.
Well, the number one request that we're getting from the Teachers Association for the past few months has been professional development on implementation of the new core.
Yeah.
And we just haven't been able to figure out a strategy to do that. We're not equipped ourselves to do it, but we can. They've had the core academies, but they're dwindling to almost nothing now.
Oh, are they?
Yeah, mm-hmm. but I'm sure we can find somebody that can come in and do that, but we've got to find the time and the resources to do it.
Over on the second page under areas rated as four, and by the way, these two areas rated as one, we need to report back to Advance Ed, tell them what we're doing, show them that we are addressing these areas' needs, and make sure that they know that we're not just getting emotional about them. We did have a number of areas rated as four, very high, towards the bottom of the second page. The governing body ensures that school leadership has autonomy to meet the goals and instruction, and I appreciate the school board support there as well as the district office in allowing us to sometimes step outside of the box and do some things that are meaningful. And from this, the faculty, staff, students, parents also appreciate that. Number two, the school has a formal structure whereby each student is well known by at least one adult advocate in the school who supports that student's educational experience. The two things that help us there are the small size of the school and kind of the intimacy of our communities, plus the fact that we have learning strategies class. That 15 to 20 minute block of time where students are engaged in literacy activities. And we also have administrative team presentations. I think that helps our students. Number three, the school maintains facility services and equipment to provide a safe, clean, healthy environment for all students and staff. And that speaks well to all the stakeholders. I mean, the maintenance, and cafeteria, custodians, faculty, staff, people that come and go. Number four, the school provides services that support the counseling, assessment, referral, educational, and career planning needs of all students, and that is highly complimentary of the counseling department and Dixie and her staff. Mm-hmm. And number five, stakeholder feedback, results and analysis. That's getting input from faculty, all of our stakeholders. Now, we didn't get a lot of parent input on the advanced ed survey, which we set up in the library during parent-teacher conference. We had 100% faculty, staff, and students, not so much from parents, but we have a lot of ways of getting information from all of our stakeholders. And we had done surveys the previous year through Schools of the Future. We do exit essays with our students. Lots of data that goes into giving us direction, and that was also rated a 4. Student evaluation, this is in testing. These are all 3s and 4s, the quality of the assessment, administration, quality of learning, and equity of learning. And I can tell you from personal experience that we are doing more and more and more testing, more than I've ever seen. From March to the end of school, it's all testing now. And very little time for instruction, to be honest with you.
I'm sure, that's true.
That's not overstating it.
No.
We have to be very creative in how all of this is scheduled and planned. And we still need to cover those standards that are tested in the SAGE testing at the end of the school year. Mm-hmm. Number five, this is the Effective Learning Environments Observation Tool. This is from the observation of the on-site team as they went in and observed teachers. And I think they got to every single teacher during this process. The first number is the rating our school got, for example, Equitable, 2.84. The second number, in parentheses, is the national average. From advanced ed, we were above the national average on every one of these line items. High achievement, supportive, active, students are making progress, mastering the material, well-managed classrooms, digital, and overall, we were at 2.95 above the national average. The digital is nationally the lowest. It's technology. You'll notice later in my report that the visiting team said that we were a little low in technology, which is, I can go in any school and say you need more technology, I believe. I believe we are in a good place with technology. I believe that we have ample technology for the size of our school. We can always use more, but we get the most out of the funding that's available to us, and we have a reasonable rotation system on technology. And then at the end, summary of the external review, these are some of the written comments that they included in the report, the full report, that you can read through. The outcome of all this, over on the last page under Roman numeral 6, the external team recommends Emory High be granted a new 5-year term of accreditation by the Advanced Ed Accreditation Commission. So we were very pleased with that, and we will take all of these recommendations into consideration, and the way we look at those recommendations is an opportunity to improve our school. So any questions about that?
It's quite a process. Right. We knew you would fly through with flying colors.
It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
It's accreditation.
Yeah.
Just an enormous. Mm.
Thank you.
Just to say, from the last one that we went through, which was not through Advanced Ed, this is quite different.
It is different.
And even the fact that they only had 3 personnel, 2 from the same school, which was a middle school, no females, which females have a different perspective. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was different than what I witnessed before.
Interesting.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that, and glad to hear that everything went so well. Approval of the 2015 SHARP survey participation. And you're welcome to stay, or if you're busy with things.
The SHARP understand. Survey is the Student Health and Risk Prevention Survey that we do every other year. Every 2 years, it's administered on odd number. That doesn't sound right. Odd years. Anyway, 2015 and beginning about first part of February, but it needs board approval, and it is also requires parental permission. It assesses, does a needs assessment for 6th, 8th, 10th, and 12th graders, and a youth risk behavior survey for grades 9 through 12. And basically it's on high risk behaviors, substance abuse, those kinds of things. So we need to have the board approve our participation again. We've done this now for
a long time.
20 years, but
yeah.
We'd recommend the board approve our participation in the SHARP survey again, 2015.
I move that we do so. I think the information that we get is
interesting to see if it's
yeah.
getting better.
Yes.
Since we've had these changes.
Some of our schools are small, like we'll get a really good profile on most of our schools, but you get a school like Book Cliff, Greener High, it's just kind of broken down into a different format, but it's still good information.
Okay.
Public Health uses it a lot, and other agencies use it for grant writing and
the last one put it into a learning strategies presentation for our students, and took that same presentation to the sheriff's office and presented it for the sheriff.
Well, that's very
staff.
Helpful.
I think it's good information to have.
Yeah, that's great.
Did you move on?
I made the motion.
I'll second
all
that.
In favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we have policy actions.
I'm going to take the first one, and then Jared will go down through the list. Some of them, a lot of them, are just are revisions from some we just passed. But we learn more as we go. It was just a month ago that we looked at the summer use of buses for extracurricular activity, policy JJIBA, is summer sports, or summer extracurricular activity for participation. It includes the summer use of buses. I've sent it to you previously. I hope you've had a chance to read it. It incorporates the things that you talked about in board meeting. And also, I think the big thing that most of them are concerned about is the cost. And we have done some work on that. And of course, that'll change depending on the cost of the operation of a bus or suburban or district vehicle. But right now, we're setting that. It's not in the policy. It's a separate page I gave you. The policy deals with the guidelines. and again, it's for extracurricular, those things that are related to curriculum, such as FFA has a summer program, marching band has a summer program that's tied to curriculum. They don't come under this policy. They are allowed to use the buses and travel, and if the board approves any other school or community events that for participation, that would be included. Otherwise, this policy would be in effect, and it basically allows each team or extracurricular group to have at least one, have one camp or clinic per summer under this policy, but it does require them to cover the cost. Now, right now, that's calculated to be $1 a mile for the use of a bus plus the cost of the driver, depending on what the trip is. The cost of the driver is going to vary depending on how far and how many days and layover costs and things like that. And suburban, 50 cents per mile. And so that's basically what we're looking at right now. And again, that'll be recalculated each year annually. That's why it's not in the policy, is because it will change depending on the cost of fuel and all of those things, as you know, as we go along. But I'm not going to go clear through the whole policy, but if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them as you read through it, or any questions or any errors you might have found in my spelling, my grammar. Not a big change from what you had before, but it changes the focus a little bit. So. But I am recommending the board approve this one at least till next month.
I'll make the motion that we approve it.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, Jared.
We'll email this out to the principals.
The first revision that I have is for the cash disbursement policy. Mm-hmm. This is a fairly quick revision of the policy we just approved, and then the rest of them all have to do with the change that came from the legislature in how we allow outside use of our buildings. So I'll do the cash disbursement first and then go over the rest. And in the cash disbursement policy, it's really a small change in terms of the overall policy, but we had initially put in the policy that every expense needed to be pre-approved. And that was based on the suggested rule from the State Office of Education. But as we looked into the actual law, it did not require that. And as we also look at practicality. It's nearly impossible. So we want to recommend, I underlined all of the changes in there, but the substance of it is that we would not require pre-approval for the first tier of expenditures, which is 0 to 500. We're still recommending it whenever possible. It's just not required. So that's really the big change in that first policy. Okay, the rest of the policies, excuse me, in the 2014 legislative session, there was a real substantial change made in how our school buildings can be used by outside groups. And what the law basically says is that our school buildings can be used for any purpose that is considered a civic center use of the building. It's non-commercial, but if it's being used for the benefit of the public, basically, in a non-commercial way, our schools are to be, we're to allow them for that use, basically, as long as it doesn't interfere with educational purposes. And so the other thing that goes along with that is that whenever the building is used as a civic center, the legislature gave the school district governmental immunity, meaning that whoever's using the building, if something happens, the school district is not liable. We do have some signs for each of the buildings that risk management sent us, and we'll probably get some more, especially at Emory High. They sent two for each building, and I can see at Emory High multiple areas where we might need one of those signs. But the sign just says, use at your own risk, basically. You know, so That's really the idea that was passed by the legislature, but risk management sent us some proposed language that we ought to have in our policies, and one of the big changes is that instead of saying that we are renting buildings, we now need to say that we are issuing a permit for building use. So in a lot of this, that is the language that we're changing. And really, as I go through these, it's more of a structural change in the policies than a substantive change of what we're doing. But the first form and the first policy in here is the fundraising application form. Okay, this one, sorry, I should have done this one first. It's not actually with the buildings, but with our new fundraising policy, we needed to have one little change, which is that the principal, right at the top of this form, you'll see the principal designates, is this fundraising activity school sponsored?
Mm-hmm.
If it is school sponsored, there's a set of rules that pertains to it, to the fundraiser. If it's not, there's kind of a separate set of rules. But when the principal designates that it's school sponsored right at the top of this form, and then the rest of it is filled out, then there's liability for the event and everything like that. The other change to this form was that there were a couple of approval lines added to the bottom based on what the law says. So for anything above $2,500, the superintendent needs to approve it, and anything above $10,000, the board would actually need to approve. And that is based on the anticipated net revenues from the fundraiser. So that's just a small change in that form. Okay.
And keep it under 2,500 if they're going to put flamingos on my lawn, please. Because I won't approve it.
I was kind of expecting that comment. Okay. So the first policy being revised is KFB. We're calling it the building permit and use policy instead of building rental and use policy. A lot of the language as you go through here is just what I explained.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to emphasize again on the liability. If it's being used as a civic center under this revised policy, then we have governmental immunity. So we actually don't need to require the person to fill out or to provide a certificate of insurance or do some of those steps that we have for everyone in the past. However, if it's a commercial event, if it's for profit,
then
we require the certificate of insurance. And in one of the ones I'll go through in a minute, the building permit for commercial use, there is an indemnification agreement that's basically page 2 of that permit application. And so they need to fill out and sign the indemnification agreement and provide the certificate of coverage. Those would be the main changes on that policy, KFB. All right, KFB E1. This would be the new building permit and use agreement for non-commercial purposes. So I've separated the permitting agreement into one for commercial and one for non-commercial. Basically just has the information that the school would need to issue the permit, and then a section at the bottom that the school would use to fill out their approval or non-approval of the event. For example, if Mr. Davis has something going on that's educationally related, he can say, not available, and that's perfectly fine. All right, KFB E2 is the building permit and use agreement for commercial purposes. It's similar to the previous one, except that there is language right in the middle there in bold that explains the certificate of liability that has to be given. And also the second page is the building use indemnification agreement. And so it's just an updating of those forms. Okay, policy KFB E3 as revised would actually be combining two of our current policies, which we have two rate schedules, and I've just put them all onto one page. That's really all it is. I haven't changed any of the actual rates. they're just all on one page. And then as I was going through these policies, what I found is if you go through our existing building use policies, there are several, and as I read through them, most of them were saying almost the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I've tried to do here is just combine them into what's needed in my mind at least. So
I'm going to rescind all these.
KFB R1 would be the revised building use rules. And so this would be one policy rule page that a principal would hand out to the person at the time that a permit is given. We've had two or three. This actually, if you look at the top, it replaces four existing policies. So the rules that are in here are rules that were really scattered throughout all of those four policies and just put together. And if we need to add rules in the future, we can, which is fine, but it would just be under this one policy. And then every principal has the same rule, two pages of rules to hand out when a building is issued for a permit. Behind that, I've given those policies that would be rescinded.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just all, there's a strikeout on all of that language because we're recommending that they be rescinded. But again, in these rules, I haven't added any new rules. I've just consolidated our existing rules to try to make it a little bit simpler.
Okay,
any
thank
questions?
You.
I know that's a lot of policies.
Yeah.
How does county rep fit into this?
Okay,
do they still have a separate set
yes.
of rules?
In the first policy here, which is the building permit and use policy, we've kept the same language that says that basically Emory County has use of our buildings without, you know, charging a rental fee, etc. But we also have a separate policy that is it's basically our agreement with County Rec, and that I haven't touched.
Okay.
It would be the same. Now, it is one that I want to look at in the future at some point, and if so, I probably get two or three principals to get on a committee and we review that together.
Is there any language in any of these policies or revised policies about custodial support?
There is.
Okay.
Under the agreement with County Rec, they are supposed to provide custodial support, and we can actually charge if we have to provide that custodial support.
If they don't do it, and we
they
have
don't
yes.
do it, then we can bill them.
Yeah, and that's really always been in policy, and so it remains. The other thing is, it's in the building use rules, this summary of the three or four that we had, that with any rental, whether it's for a commercial or a non-commercial purpose, if we have to provide custodial services, we're entitled to charge for that. Now, I know that principals, by and large, just have custodians take care of it, and we haven't really charged, but
right.
we can. So that's what's in there as it relates to custodians.
Okay.
If we need something additional, talk to me and we can look at that.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So can we just do a motion, one motion for all of these?
Yes.
It would include the policy actions on all of the revisions as stated on our agenda. So a motion is in order for those.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we have the business administrator's report. Do you have any other?
No, I do want to recognize that as we prepare the budget and everything, I really do a minimal amount of that, and I just think it's important to recognize the contributions of especially Jackie, but school principals and secretaries, as you know.
Sure.
But I just think it's important to state that I appreciate those efforts.
They do a lot of work. We know that. Thank you. Superintendent's report.
Just a couple of things. Make you aware, again, I sent you copies of letters of retirement. Teresa Jeffs, teacher at Cottonwood, and Roanna Rich, bus driver. She's kind of, Roanna has been kind of an icon for so many years with the buses.
Mm-hmm.
Uh, But she seems to have been very happy the last few months in school.
Can't understand
that. She retired as a bus driver after 30-some years, or I can't remember how many, but.
It's patience, isn't it?
Also recognize, since our last meeting, I did receive a letter, and so did Larry and Todd and Steve. But a letter from the High School Activity Association congratulating Emory High baseball team on the 2A state baseball championship.
Back to back.
I'd like to congratulate the players, first of all, and then the coaches and the administration, Emory High, and the support they have given. And you know, it's not easy to sit in seminary graduation, and the guy who's supposed to be conducting it's catching at the baseball game. He was better looking at seminary graduation. You know, they had a young lady there conducting. But I found out you can put your iPhone in a hymn book and still watch the game and listen to seminary graduation.
Oh, dear. And he admits it. I mean, that's pretty good.
Oh,
that is exciting.
But it was great.
I was glad to hear
they had to do it the hard way
through
and
town.
Come back through the
consolation
bracket and win.
The hard way.
Beat Grand twice, but
that's great.
Congratulate them on that. And then do have one short closed meeting item, personnel item.
I also just, I think this is true, but I read that Emory High won the All Sport Award for 2A this year, which is the combination of all of the, in the Deseret News anyway.
I
read that
article. I saw something too, yeah.
Good.
That is neat. Wonderful.
Are there any public comments? Anything you'd like to?
Well, you guys
bounced
me to say.
Oh,
I'm going to go.
All those.
Closed meeting for personnel reasons.
Okay.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Thank you so much.
Yes. Thank you. We emptied your satchel.
This won't take very long when we